Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
What's up? We are back with another edition of the DNVR Rams podcast. It is late night, Saturday, April 6th. Hope everybody is staying safe out there. I hope everybody's property is doing okay. It is hurricane winds outside. It's been insane. I've never seen anything like this. My fence is holding on by a limb right now. I'm just praying that I'm going to wake up and it's still going to be there in the morning. But it's been crazy. So I unfortunately was not able to get up to Fort Collins for the scrimmage this morning like I intended to. Just, you know, kind of out of my control with this weather situation. I really just didn't know what to expect. And with a 150-mile commute round trip, it can get a little hairy. That said, we do have takeaways from Kevin Lytle. So I'm going to do this old school radio style and I'm going to talk about his article. I think there's some good stuff in there. I'm looking forward to breaking it down. I'm also going to hit him up. I'll hope to have him on the show at some point. Maybe we can get him on tomorrow if he's not busy. We'll just have to see on that. But again, I'm going to talk about his takeaways and then I'm going to get into some thoughts on the Final Four and WrestleMania Night 1. Yes, I am a wrestling nerd. I thought tonight was a lot of fun. I'll save all that for the end, though, because I know not everybody is into it. If you don't want to hear my thoughts on The Rock and Cody Rhodes, I certainly don't blame you guys, but I do think there is a little bit of crossover based on some of the interaction I've had when I've talked about it in the past. WrestleMania is a big pop culture sporting event. It's tied in. I think wrestling is probably the biggest it's been since I've been a little kid. Kind of a random episode, I know, but I also think it'll be kind of fun being able to talk about a variety of different things, and I will get some more content throughout the weekend as well. Real quick, your Front Range Toyota stores are excited to begin our new partnership with DNVR. Toyota is the official vehicle of DNVR. Trucks have always been a part of Toyota's DNA for generations. Toyota has built durable legends destined for greatness and perfect for Colorado. Whether you're conquering off-road trails or hauling the way of the world, there's a Toyota truck that's right for you. The all-new 2024 Tacoma and the return of the iconic 2024 Land Cruiser coming this spring. Toyota offers 17 models with available all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive like the Epic 4Runner. Toyota also currently offers more low and zero-emission vehicles combined than any other automaker to give customers numerous choices to reduce their carbon footprint. There are 16 different hybrid vehicles to choose from, like the Tundra iForce Max hybrid truck. Not to be outdone, Toyota SUVs take command on the road and on the trail, so you can explore the road less traveled without sacrificing smooth city rides in SUVs like the RAV4 and the Grand Highlander. Toyota is a proud partner of CSU Athletics and the official vehicle of DNVR. There are a lot of financial institutions out there. Here's the one I want you to remember: Premier Members Credit Union. They're not a bank, which means they do things differently, like putting their members first with higher savings interest and lower loan rates. This is an organization that serves the community and the Colorado community in particular. With PMCU, you get local branches, friendly tellers, and the tools you need to save smarter, like their new high-yield savings account, or you can earn 5% APY on your first $2,000 with their reverse-tier money market. Whatever your goals, they can help. PMCU is about creating a better banking experience for their community. PMCU has the tools to help you save smarter. When you become a new member at PMCU, you're going to get $200. You just have to open a checking account and sign up for e-statements. It's that easy. This will be the best money move yet. Head to becomepremier.com to find out more. Cool, cool, cool. Later on, we will get into some takeaways from WrestleMania Night 1. I'm also going to give some thoughts on the Final Four, both the men's and women's side of things. Couple of pretty good games today, but ended up with pretty predictable results. The women's side obviously had a little bit more controversy with that illegal screen. I'll give my thoughts on all of that. I'm also going to give some CSU Hoops recruiting targets. One name in particular might be a little bit surprising to Ram fans. Guy with some Nuggets ties. He's getting a lot of high major interest. But maybe he's just going to want to come back to Colorado. So we'll talk about him. We'll talk about Trevor Baskin, the D2 transfer. It sounds like it's going to come down to CU or CSU for him. We'll get into all of it later, but I just wanted to start with football. Today was the first scrimmage. Due to weather, unfortunately, I wasn't able to make that commute up to Fort Collins and back. I cannot wait to move back to Fort Collins so I don't have to deal with this kind of shit anymore. Fortunately, Kevin Lytle had some takeaways on the Coloradoan website. Highly recommend you subscribe to him. I've said it a million times, but I genuinely believe he is the best traditional newspaper reporter in the state on the sports side. I don't even think it's that close. I also encourage you to go read the piece, even though I'm going to talk about it. It's worth your time. Again, he does awesome work. But as far as some of what stood out to me in regards to this scrimmage, and it wasn't a traditional one versus one scrimmage, the number one offense largely went against the number two defense, and then the number one defense largely went against the number two offense. But even that doesn't tell the whole picture because there were a lot of starters that did not participate, unsurprisingly. Guys like Torrey Horton, Blackburn, Dom Jones, none of those guys were in. I guess we'll see what happens in the spring game, but honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if it's very similar on the 20th, especially with your superstars. There's just not a ton to be gained by risking injury for a guy like Torrey Horton in a situation like this in April. He and BFN already have established chemistry. It's not like you're trying to force reps for the sake of that. Just a heads up, though, so you guys know what to expect in a couple of weeks, and just so you're aware as far as how you should gauge today's results, you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt. There weren't all of the starters playing. You have hurricane-like winds. The passing game isn't exactly going to be perfect. I mean, you don't have Torrey. Justice Ross Simmons, he's also out all spring. He'll be okay, should be good by fall. Had off-season shoulder surgery. But with no Torrey, with no Justice Ross Simmons in the mix, it did sound like Donovan Ollie, who came in from Washington State and then Cincinnati, although he barely played for them a year ago, it sounded like him and Goffney had a nice day. I talked about that on Thursday, just wanting to keep an eye on those guys because I think the transfers, especially with the loss of Lewis Brown, are going to be really important to CSU's success this year. Goffney had his moments a year ago. He was especially strong in the Boise State game, but kind of cooled off as the season progressed. I think he only had 3 catches over the final 3 weeks. They need him to, look more like he did in that Boise State game where he has 7 catches, close to 100 yards, if not 100 yards. Should have pulled up those numbers again, but it's encouraging that he's making plays. It's encouraging that you're getting production from Ollie, a guy that had 2 touchdowns against CSU and Pullman a couple years ago. He's got good size. He moves well for a guy that has size like that, so that's encouraging. That sounds like Caleb Goody, the sophomore receiver, also made a big play. That's all good news. That's exactly what you want to hear. I talked about needing some of these younger guys to break out this season, whether it be Goody, who seems to be based on the social media posts, and then just based on him making a big play today in the scrimmage. Again, this is from Kevin Lytle's takeaways via the Coloradoan. It seems like, some of these guys are poised to kind of break out in their second year in the system. And that's exactly what you need if you're Norvell. Those first couple of classes, really dependent on transfers to really even field a team, basically just have enough bodies to try and play a competitive football game. Now is when you're hoping that some of these guys that you've been able to come in are developing and pays off in the long run. For as much attention as we put into the portal, and rightfully so, it's obviously a big element of college football today. When you look at the teams winning national championships these last couple of years, when you look at the most consistently dominant programs, it still starts with development. It's signing high school talent, bringing them into your system, coaching them up, and building your depth from the ground up. And that was a tough spot for Norvell in year one because you basically have to rebuild the entire roster and you've been kind of working towards it these last couple of years. Now, though, is when you need it to start paying off. On the offensive side, I'm cautiously optimistic about a couple of groups. I think at receiver, we're going to start to see some of these young guys break out, potentially within the O-line. That was another thing that stood out from these takeaways was that they tried to run the football a lot and really kind of focus on some situational stuff. I mean, that was a huge issue for CSU a year ago. When you look at some of those losses and tight games, just the inability to execute in short yardage situations, in red zone situations, in late game situations, 2-minute drill, all that. If the Rams are going to take a leap this year and make a bowl game, be the type of competitive team that we are hoping and thinking that they can be, one of the big keys is going to be just being a generally more efficient team. You can't be so boom or bust. It can't just be we hit on a 80-yard pass play, or you know, we went straight down the field, or we went 3 and out. You've got to find some consistency. Some of that is going to be on the quarterback making good decisions, and they obviously need to cut back on the turnovers, which were a major issue a year ago. And one of the ways you can do that and bring some stability to the entire operation is by running the football. And we saw that later on in the year when they got Justin Marshall going, they were able to just have a little bit more ball control, give the defense a little bit of a break. And I think that's going to be a big factor in this season if they're able to establish it. Fortunately, if you're CSU, running back might be the deepest group on the team. You've got Marshall and Henderson, who you're obviously really excited about. Van Shield at this point has proven, if nothing else, he's a guy you can trust for some short yardage situations, or, you know, just to be back there in pass protection. He's a trustworthy back. You don't feel bad if he's out there. You've got Avery Morrow back for one more year. Kobe Johnson's back from injury. They've got a ton of depth and options there. If you can lean on that and you can control possession and move down the field that way and limit turnovers and limit the situations where Braden's having to throw 50 plus times a game, if you can put him in a spot where instead it's more like 35 times a game, that's a much more sustainable recipe. And if it just takes some of the pressure off of your young quarterback from having to feel like he's Superman, which he shouldn't have to be, because you're going to have a ton of weapons around you. Obviously, you got the best wide receiver in the conference, Justice Ross Simmons, you feel really good about. You got a couple of other vets. Tight end group is TBD. I'm still a little skeptical of that group at the moment. But with these running backs, with the O-line depth that you have, with the receivers that you have, you feel pretty good. Can you take advantage of all that talent? Can you be explosive and attack teams vertically, but without being reckless, while also being able to, you know, play some ball control and just kind of alleviate some of the issues that really shot CSU in the foot a year ago, which really comes down to just situational stuff. As far as the defense goes, I don't have a ton to say, but Kevin wrote about Boom Jock standing out, which is encouraging. It's probably going to be him and Chase Wilson starting at linebacker. You're going to need some of these young guys, much like what we talked about with receiver. You're going to need some of these young guys, Noor Gatkuth and Boom Jock, to really step up and make plays, because you're in a tough spot having lost Grady Kelly and Mo Kamara and Chigozie Anuzium and Ron Harge. That's a lot of vets. You have a lot of vets back, particularly in the secondary, but Isaiah Assisima and Elias Larry, the transfers out of Navy and Nevada, are starting at least in this scrimmage. So we'll see what happens there. I think Dom Jones will be in the mix too. I'm not pessimistic about the defense this year, because I think you do have a lot of talent. I just feel like there's a lot of unknown at this point. I'm not sure that the depth is killer, especially compared to the depth of the D-line a year ago. You feel really good about a lot of these young guys. It's just going to be a situation where potentially some of these guys are thrust into much bigger roles than they've had at any point in their collegiate careers this far. And it's tough when you've had experienced guys like Kamara and Kelly to lean on in that front seven. Losing them impacts you at every level. It's going to impact the secondary. It impacts the defensive fronts and trying to stop the run. It affects you in terms of how effectively you can get after the quarterback. You feel the loss of those guys in the front seven. It's a major thing I'm interested to see in terms of how CSU is able to respond, especially, you know, given you've got different pieces at corner too. I'm looking forward to getting to fall camp, guys. I'm looking forward to getting to those reps that really matter when you've got the whole roster here, when you have a much more realistic idea of what this team is actually going to be, what its identity is. We'll keep an eye, though. We'll keep an eye out on kind of what happens these next couple of weeks. Obviously, the spring game is always interesting. I'm just itching for the real stuff. That's all. I think at times we can kind of blow spring ball out of proportion or get too carried away and think that because this guy is standing out in April, he's going to stand out in August. And the reality is I've seen guys that were the MVP of spring not even crack the two deep come August. Take all spring takeaways with a grain of salt. That's all I'm saying. Let's move on. Let's shift the focus to hoops. Let's talk about some CSU recruiting targets. Like I said at the beginning, sounds like 6'7" transfer wing Trevor Baskin, probably the top D2 transfer available this cycle. It's going to come down to CSU or CU. It's not surprising. He's a Colorado kid at Colorado Mesa. I'm sure he's got friends on both campuses. I'm sure he wants his friends and family to be able to experience his last year of eligibility. And I mean, what's kind of interesting about the situation is both programs have a track record, or at least have an example of taking a D2 guy and really elevating their game. Derek White was a D2 star at UC Colorado Springs. He goes up to Boulder. Now, obviously, he's like a top 50 player in the NBA. His ascension's been pretty wild. But if you're CSU, you've had three of these guys over the last couple of years: Joel Scott, Patrick Cartier, and of course, Headband Joe, Joel Palmer, that all made the jump from D2 or D3 to D1 and had success. Both schools have quite a few holes to fill and can pretty much guarantee a starting roster spot. I know coaches say that they don't do things like that, but come on, let's grow up. Let's be in the real world. I don't think Baskin is going to go to CU or CSU to sit on the bench. We'll see where he ends up, I guess. There's always the possibility that somebody comes in with a Dalton Connect type NIL offer. I mean, in 2024, it's certainly a possibility. Connect got like $800,000 in a car to go to Tennessee. If there is a high major school that decides they really want him and they're willing to throw that type of cash at him, we'll see. I don't know if we're going to be able to land him, but I still feel pretty good. And I my gut is that he ends up at CSU, but that really is just a gut, because everything that I've heard is that it's CSU or CU. And I don't have anything that says it's leaning any other way. It's a feeling. It's just a feeling I have. I was really interested to see that Kerry Booth, son of Nuggets GM Calvin Booth, he originally committed to Penn State, then went to Notre Dame, is now in the transfer portal. He is seriously considering CSU. In an interview with League Him, who also has done some nice spotlight content on Neat Clifford, Booth told them that Illinois, Michigan, Texas, and Colorado State have stuck out among a long list of schools to make contact. Ohio State has recently joined the mix. Normally, I would still feel really skeptical, and I do think it's probably a long shot that we land him, just because, I mean, when you look at a guy like Booth, 6'10" frame, 203 pounds, really versatile athletic profile, a former top 50 recruit in the country, he's going to have serious, serious interest from big-time programs across the country. But, I mean, he's from Colorado. He played at the Brewster Academy, a private school. Obviously, his dad being the GM of the Nuggets kind of helps our cause. If he just wants to be closer to family, that helps. What was especially encouraging, though, was in that interview with League Him, he talked about the fit being really important for him. He's basically had to be a 5 at Notre Dame, and he wants to be more of a stretch 4. I mean, if he could come in and basically play that Patrick Cartier range, but with a much higher athletic ceiling, just a different type of profile of athlete, man, that would be exciting. Especially, you know, and again, this is getting carried away, but if Clifford comes back, you're able to land a guy like Baskin out of Mesa, or a Redis Pertritis from Air Force, man, all of a sudden there is a ton of length and athleticism on this roster. If you're then able to add somebody for that 5 role, or maybe it's Kyle Evans, maybe you already have him, you've just got to feel pretty good about what that team could be. It feels like the build of a San Diego State-style roster. Again, probably a long shot that we actually sign him in the end, but I think it's a win that we're even in the mix with some of these other teams. And it shows the importance of establishing these types of relationships. CSU recruited Booth all 4 years he was in high school. Started at Cherry Creek, went out to the Brewster Academy, which is somewhere on the East Coast, like New Hampshire, I think. They never stopped recruiting him, knowing damn well he wasn't going to sign at CSU. He was a top 50 recruit in the country, was getting all types of Big Ten and high major interests. But sometimes that stuff can come back full circle for you. And for CSU on football and basketball, like I really think that could be huge for the program, especially if you start winning. Like if you start winning, it becomes so much easier for these guys to want to come home, and you know, having a run to the NCAA tournament, that probably helped. All right, one more guy to keep an eye on. According to a recent report from Jamie Shaw of On3 Sports, we've retweeted him a couple of times. Appreciate that he tags us in all the CSU recruiting updates. Brennan Rigsby, who's a 6'3", 185-pound junior guard, Oregon transfer from DeBec, Colorado, originally. The list of schools that have reached out to him include BYU, Wyoming, Nebraska, Omaha, High Point. There's a bunch of them, but those are the significant ones. UTEP, Texas, El Paso. If he wants to come home, I feel pretty good about the possibility of landing him, and I like that. I like the idea of bringing in a veteran point guard that has had experience playing at the high major level, and whether he's in the starting lineup or whether he's, you know, running the twos off the bench, just having a vet that you can trust, another guy that can facilitate, that can create outside of, you know, Kyan Evans, who you think is going to be the future there. That's a really intriguing situation to me. So I would keep an eye on him. Again, Brennan Rigsby, Oregon transfer from DeBec, Colorado. He just feels like he would be an ideal fit for what CSU needs. Guy gets to come back home. It'd be an ideal situation for him too. Yeah, that's about it. Obviously, keeping an eye on some of the other guys we've talked about as well. Luke O'Brien, Pertritis, etc. Xavier Ducell, former Wyoming and Fresno State guard, could give CSU a little bit of depth as far as the shooters go, though I think San Diego State's in on him as well. We'll keep an eye on all those. We'll provide updates as more information becomes available. I'm going to give just a couple of thoughts on the Final Four. I don't think it's worth spending a ton of time on because we ended up with a really chalky national championship game. We got UConn and Purdue, which is just outside of Houston. It felt like we've been on a collision course for these two in the title game all year long. Both games were competitive, and you credit NC State and especially Bama, who really pushed UConn, but Even when these teams were in it, it didn't feel like they had enough to quite overcome the one seeds, you know? Like UConn would be tied with Bama, and then all of a sudden they just go on these 9-0 runs, and then they pull away at the end and still end up winning by double digits. And Purdue felt similar. Like you had moments where NC State kind of pushed them, but it seemed like they were fatigued, and I don't know. I guess it was just kind of a very predictable result. What was interesting, obviously, this weekend was all the attention that went on the women's side of things. Absolutely massive numbers for the men's tournament and the women's tournament. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. All the haters that have tried to proclaim college basketball is dead. I know there's been more focus on the women's side of things, but the men's tournament really has been awesome as well. And I'm excited to see what happens in this UConn-Purdue game. I'm also excited to see what happens in the women's game between Iowa and South Carolina. Feels like this was the title game that most of the country wanted. I know some people have kind of turned on Iowa and Caitlin Clark, and she can be a bit of a whiner. I've been critical of her at times. I talked about how I thought she flopped during that whole court storming incident thing, but she's just been electric, and to get an opportunity to see her play for a title, I think is going to be really fun against a just Goliath of a team in South Carolina. They're trying to run the table, which is just insane to do at this level. I'm not going to make a whole soap opera out of this. I'm not going to drag on and on. I tweeted how I felt about the moving screen that was called on UConn at the end of the game. I understand that we don't want big games decided by officiating, but if you don't call it, if you let it go just because it's the last couple seconds, you're indirectly letting officiating have a big role in the outcome as well, because like they're consciously deciding not to call what was very clearly a foul. It was very easily a moving screen. I know there were a couple of TV angles that made it look a little bit deceptive, but when you see how wide her feet are, when you see how she's moving, she extends the arm. I mean, by every letter of the law, this wasn't an illegal screen. And if it's a foul in the first 38 minutes, I just don't think it's a good argument that it shouldn't be called in the last two. And usually people's opinions are based around if the team that they wanted to win benefited or the team they wanted to win ended up getting screwed by the decision. That's usually where their logic goes. As somebody who was just a neutral observer, really enjoyed UConn and Paige Beckers and enjoyed Iowa and Caitlin Clark, to me it was a very clearly a foul. Move on. Like, that's the end of the story. We'll see what happens in that title game. Before we get out of here, I'm going to give a couple of thoughts on WrestleMania. Do want to shout out the homies with Game Time. Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace for Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. I was down in Lodo for opening day. I did not go to the game, but a couple of my colleagues were able to get some sweet deals last minute with Game Time, and they didn't buy their tickets until 5 or 10 minutes before first pitch. A couple of them might have even waited until the second inning. You can get deals on tickets sometimes up to an hour after the event started. And again, the closer the game time, or the closer we get to game time, the more that the prices go down on the Game Time app. What's awesome about Game Time is you can save up to 60% buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, etc. You can see what your view is going to look like from your seat before you buy. And they have all-in pricing, so you're not going to get hit with a bunch of fees at the end. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code DNVR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms do apply. Again, create an account, use that code DNVR for $20 off. Download Game Time today, last-minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. I also want to talk to you guys about Coors Light. Sometimes it feels like we have to be on all the time, but it's important to hit the reset every now and then to kick back, whether that means just having a peaceful moment by yourself or hanging out with friends, catching a game. Whatever you're doing, when you're doing it with a Coors Light, it's a nice way to chill. Coors Light was the only beer that's literally made to chill. It's cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. When it's time for a refresh, just open a Coors Light. Coors Light is the beer I reach for when you want to hit that reset. Grab the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/DNVR. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, we're just about to get out of here, but I figured I'd wrap up and have a little bit of fun by giving a couple of thoughts on WrestleMania Night 1. I thought Night 1 was really entertaining. I had a blast watching it. Honestly, I was kind of skeptical coming into WrestleMania. I just thought that with so much attention, with all the eggs being in the Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns basket, and then you have the other storylines with it, and The Rock and Seth Rollins and the tag match and all that, I just wondered if everything else was going to get overshadowed. But I thought the matches were competitive. I thought that they were entertaining. I think starting off with the women's title fight was a banger. I didn't get the result I was hoping for. I was hoping Becky Lynch would pull it out, but Rhea Ripley, she's a badass. That was a really entertaining match. It was awesome to see in the tag match R-Truth get his moment. I still think he's the funniest dude in wrestling, but to see him win the Raw titles with Miz was cool, and I like that they split up the SmackDown and Raw titles. Didn't really understand why they had them together the last couple years. Seemed like it defeated the entire purpose to me, but who knows there. Jey Uso beats Jimmy Uso in the end, which is kind of what you expected, and same even at the end with the Rock and Roman winning a match in which they had all of the things go their way, the Rock threatening the ref, all of that was to be expected. You knew that Cody and Seth were not going to win on night one because they don't want the Rock banished from the arena night two. They want him there. They want the spectacle. In fact, I think that Cody losing night one means it's more likely that they win, that he finishes the story and wins the title on night two. Maybe you have something dramatic like The Rock turns on Roman, or like Solo comes out and tries to get involved, and then John Cena comes out dramatically. It just feels like we have finally built up enough over the last year to finally put Cody Rhodes over and have him get that title and have it really mean something. I'm interested to see how long that match goes. I think they'll really draw it out. It'll be an intense one, just like this one on night one was. I'm interested to see what happens with Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre night two. Does Drew beat him or does he get screwed? You know, like it wouldn't shock me if Drew did beat Seth Rollins, but then Damian Priest cashes in on him, especially now that he's lost the tag titles and that kind of falls in line with McIntyre coming so close, but then always, you know, coming out just a little bit short and would like kind of play in nicely with him going insane and his whole heel storyline there. I don't know. I'm really interested to see what happens, but I had a lot of fun watching night one. I'd be interested to see what some of you guys think. If you're into it, if you're watching Mania, you know, send a tweet my way. I would love to talk about all that stuff with you guys. A lot going on right now. It's an interesting time of year. We'll talk a lot of recruiting over the next couple of months. Obviously, we've got a couple of more weeks of spring football to talk about. Hoops off season. It's never ending as a content creator, but I love it. Shout out to all of you for supporting the content. Much love, y'all. Always proud to be. Peace.
Peaches out of Palisades, sweet as mama's marmalade. This shit sound like summer days, the windows down on harmony. The family band sing harmonies, my daddy played the drums. My mama slapped that bass, my sister sang these songs. Dancing under canopies, we thank the trees for all their leaves. We are just some drops of water, together make up seven seas. And one day I'll be like my father, one day I will learn to breathe. I'm choking on the thought that I am not the man I wanna be. I got blood on my shirt, like I wear my heart on my sleeve. She said I look good in red, but that went straight to my head. So now she's rocking my tees, tucked into new Prada jeans. And we ain't spoken a month, but I just saw her last week. The lipstick stain still on my cheek, like we ain't talk enough. And we always seem to laugh, but never nod at us. So the future's looking grim, it's kinda ominous. And this song ain't about love, that'd be too obvious. See, this is more about lust and all of my misconceptions. And this is more about me and all of my self-deception. I'll tell myself a lie 100 times, don't need corrections. But every night I pray to God, I hope I learn my lesson. And the peaches out from Palisade, and they sweet as mama's marmalade. And this should sound like summer days, the windows down on harmony. The family band sing harmonies, my daddy played the drums. And my mama slapped that bass, and my sister sang these songs. Dancing hand in hand, we were tripping to left feet. Like a middle school slow dance, no one knew how to lead. But I'm still thankful for these days.